Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name, actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. Listen!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo podcast. My name is Philip Musin, and today I'm joined with Per Schneider,
hello,
Brian Altano, and Miranda Sanchez.
Hello.
We did it.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
We made it through. How's everyone doing?
We're
jealous.
Jealous?
What?
Jealous.
Why are you jealous?
What? Because of this on the desk. If you're not watching the version, check it out. Because Philip brought something very cool back.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true. I am officially now a certified Nintendo Labo, what does it say?
Cardboard constructionist.
Yes, a cardboard constructionist. Yeah.
So you can legally build anything out of cardboard.
Yes, so if you need anything built out of cardboard, like a home or a hospital or something like that, just, you know.
Or piano or fishing rod.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I need your name is from my Pikachu. So.
Your name is Philip. I thought it was Flip.
No. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, benounced to you and a lot of people out there, there's actually an I right after that.
All right. Well, thank you, Flip.
Yes.
So you got this in New York City because you last week flew to New York, which is how you missed the show. We showed you a bunch of times to basically have some of the world's first hands-on with Labo.
Yes, I did. But we're going to get into that a little bit later.
All right. I'm just very excited about
yes,
the cardboard.
Yes, I know. So. I'm very, very excited about it, too. But first, before we get into all that stuff, I did want to ask you guys, have you heard of these rumors sort of circulating the internet about Bandai Namco
yeah.
And a dev putting stuff on his LinkedIn page?
Yes, the Metroid Prime 4 rumors specifically.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah.
So if you haven't heard all...
Face mask, I know it.
If you haven't heard the full rumor, essentially what's happening is a developer from Bandai Namco Singapore posted on his LinkedIn page that he's allegedly working on a Switch exclusive racing game. It's titled Ridge Racer 6, as well as an unannounced IP first person shooter adventure exclusive to Switch. So the first one, Ridge Racer 8, exclusive to Switch. Now, even though we haven't heard anything about Ridge Racer, this is a total surprise to everyone.
It's been a while since we've seen a fully numbered Ridge Racer, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And we've seen
them was ages ago.
Didn't one launch with the 3DS?
Oh yeah, we had that.
It wasn't great.
It was also ages ago.
Yeah, it was it
used to be the top arcade racing franchise, and it kind of has taken a backseat to Forza Horizon. Mm-hmm.
Right,
it's Ridge Racer.
I mean, I played a ton of Ridge Racer on like N64. I played it on didn't the PSP launch with a Vita?
Yeah, with a Ridge Racer. Yes,
I remember that one was pretty good.
N64 was the one where you could do these kind of 360 spins around corners.
Yes,
like you could go like. Spinning around corners, that's all we did all
very
day.
Very practical move in racing.
Yeah, no, very. That's how we get around.
That's exactly what I look for in a racer.
That's how Pear drives his Tesla.
Practicality.
But the whole concept of finding a project on LinkedIn, that used to happen a lot more. Mm-hmm. Back in the old days when there were job postings, companies would post, like, looking for new programmers for the next installment in the Tomb Raider franchise. And then somebody would find that and it would go everywhere. And publishers and developers have learned over the years to say, hey, don't ever mention what you actually worked on until the product is out. This person seems to not have heard of that. Word of caution, it could always be fake. Right? Oh, yes. You never know whether that person created this profile. And then, of course, there's the kind of like jumping to conclusions that unannounced IP for first-person/adventure game, which sounds like Metroid, but unannounced IP is not exactly Metroid, right?
Right.
But maybe that's that person's interpretation. They feel like Metroid Prime 4 is an IP and at the time was not announced. Who knows?
Well, what we do know is that Retro is not making it. So the big question mark right now is who is making Metroid Prime 4?
A new studio is what Nintendo told us. Yeah.
We've had a lot of rumors in the past point towards Bandai Namco also working on Metroid Prime 4. And actually, I've done a little bit of investigating myself, and I've heard a lot of other people on the internet have been as well, just kind of looking further into this LinkedIn post. And I saw that Bandai Namco has been hiring more developers coming from LucasArts, who worked on the Star Wars 1313.
Yeah, they're specifically. Specifically the canceled, what was basically a bounty hunter, third person, Uncharted style, almost, I think for a moment, had Boba Fett starring in it, where you went into the rings of sort of levels underneath Coruscant, which just got like seedier and seedier and seedier. And it had a lot of like big set pieces and climbing and kind of
awesome.
It looked really awesome. We have videos of it on IGN and stuff. Me too. It really bums me out that we didn't get it. But yeah, apparently a bunch of the people who worked on that game that was canceled got moved over to this team or this studio. So
we don't have any sort of concrete evidence saying that, Bandai Namco is working on Metroid, but there are these like seeds that are sort of being planted and indicating that they could possibly be doing so.
Yeah.
And I also know that they've been in great communication with Nintendo as well, just really, talking to them directly about their ideas for this unannounced IP and getting approval with Nintendo, whether or not they're going to use it.
If Nintendo entrusts Namco Bandai to create a sequel to one of their top-selling franchises, Smash Brothers, which they did, they're going to trust them with their 20th selling franchise too, right? No offense to Metroid, but it isn't cumulatively up there even with some of the what you would consider to be kind of like the more B-tier titles, right?
Also,
the
Samus
franchise we love, but it's not as popular.
Samus is a bounty hunter.
That's right.
She turns into an orange ball, which is a character in Star Wars The Force Awakens in Episode 8.
To me, it's...
His name's BB-8. You should watch those films.
To me, it's like, it's not just possible. It was a very likely thing that Nintendo would go back to this company. They worked with another Japanese studio, obviously with Tecmo on Metroid before as well, so...
Well, it's also like, I don't know, when you look at the internal teams that Nintendo has, you would be kind of hard-pressed to be like, well, these guys make perfect sense to do... a Metroid Prime game. Like a Metroid game, we just got a Metroid game. But to see a Metroid Prime game, I mean, that is like that has a specific style to it. And I think that when Metroid Prime came out, it was sort of kind of bucking the expectations that we all had as, you know, contemporary first-person shooter fans at the time, because we were playing other shooting games where we're like, what is this game? Yeah. And it came out and did so many new things. We've had, you know, how many years since 3 came out of worth of first-person shooters every single year? 10, 20, 30 of them. So I think the bar is set even higher. So they have to come in with a very specific angle, and they really have to make something cool. Not saying they have to compete with Call of Duty, but, like, I mean, they got to do some cool stuff. And, you know, it's got to feel like a really good shooter and feel like a really good Metroid game.
And it has to be, you said it, it has to be competitive with Western first-person games because, you know, there are amazing games coming out of Japan, you know, whether visually or storytelling-wise, obviously some fantastic games, but the first person shooter genre has been rooted more in US driven or European driven development, and there's some amazing looking games that do some really clever stuff with this open open world formula.
Look at something like Titanfall, right?
That's where I first go to is being creative and innovative with something new. Like when Titanfall came onto the scene, of course we had all these really modern shooters, but like just how they changed up with the verticality and movement was so unique, and they do have a big challenge with Metroid.
That doesn't necessarily mean they have to make an online multiplayer Metroid game. We saw that with 2 or local multiplayer. It just doesn't really fit.
Story driven, just like Metro. I mean, adventure is in the title for a reason, right? Like, it is more about figuring out these puzzles and exploring this ever expanding kind of base or world. So I actually think this is really interesting. You know, I'm happy to see a new take on that franchise. It's funny because that company is not known for FPSs. It's not known for these types of games. This is the company that brought you, you know, way back when Galaga, and like they worked on like Bait and Kados for Nintendo, like a full-fledged RPG. So they've done a little bit of everything except for a game that fits that template exactly. And be interesting. I mean, Star Fox they've made, right?
Right.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what comes out of that if that's all true.
Well, speaking of more first-person shooters possibly coming to Switch and Call of Duty, as you'd mentioned earlier, Brian, there are more rumors of potentially Call of Duty Black Ops 4 coming to Switch this fall,
yeah,
I
this
believe.
Fall.
Yeah.
So, and this is a rumor that was reported by writer and industry insider Marcus Sellers through Twitter, who apparently he knows people. And he's saying that Call of Duty 2018 is Black Ops 4, and it is coming to PS4, Xbox, PC, and Switch. It is set in the modern times and is boots on the ground. The Switch version will support DLC, HD Rumble, and motion controls. The Switch version is also being ported by a company which is familiar with Call of Duty games. Now, I know it's a rumor, so it's neither here nor there.
Yeah, we don't even know what the next Call of Duty is going to be. Like, it's Treyarch's turn, so we'll see what they do. But
what was the last one they made?
I forget which one Treyarch did. But of course, they're responsible for the Black Ops games.
Yeah,
right.
It was Black Ops, right?
Yeah. Was it Black Ops?
I think Treyarch did work on Black Ops. I'm pretty sure.
I kind of just dipped out of that franchise. I'm sort of just like,
I have a hard time remembering what happened in World War II. Not the actual. I remember very well what happened.
I have no idea what happened. I ate this morning.
Infinite Warfare for sure, and then World War II. Mm-hmm. But the one that just came right before that is the one I can't remember.
World at War.
No.
That's ages ago.
100 years old.
Keep going. I'm going to look it up. Anyway, we sound like idiots.
Anyway,
while you look it up, I mean, the reason I bring this rumor up on NBC in particular is I'm just curious, and I'm asking you personally, Miranda, as a Call of Duty fan, because I think you probably are the biggest one on the show today. What would it take to make a Call of Duty, like a hardcore Call of Duty player, come over and play Call of Duty on Switch?
Is it possible? I mean, we've seen Switch versions of Call of Duty games before, and they're kind of embarrassing.
Or Nintendo versions of Call of Duty games.
Switch, excuse me. Nintendo. So yeah, like looking back at, what was it, Modern Warfare 3 footage on the Wii versus anything else.
One came to Wii U.
It was Black Ops 3.
Yes, it was Black Ops 3.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I was like, it would make sense if it were Black Ops 3 going into Black Ops 4.
Could have sworn it was World at War. Yeah.
Before Infinite.
They also ported, was it the Nintendo DS that got like 2 Call of Duties?
I think so.
Because I remember them being reviewed here, and I took a copy home and played through it. And it's
so weird.
It's actually fascinating because it's almost like it's like demakes. It's like putting a Nintendo Labo fishing rod next to a real one. It's like they are like Those are single player games based on set pieces, and like it was like a bridge blows up with a tank, but when you're playing it on DS, it's like 8 polygons. Yeah. It's great. It's kind of
really
wonderful.
Weird.
So yeah, watch videos on YouTube. They're pretty wonderful.
COD skipping Switch at launch, I actually thought was surprising. I thought for sure Nintendo had worked with Activision to get, you know, a Call of Duty game onto the Switch, even if it was a remake or something of the original, onto the Switch at launch. And like obviously they skipped Wii U at the end as well, but supported it before then.
Right.
If you remember all that.
I've said this like every time the Call of Duty conversation comes up, but I would totally buy a Call of Duty that was single player only, and then the multiplayer was a separate SKU, basically. So that someone like me,
I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing that, like, I think, like you said, the audience is not going to leave Xbox One, PS4, and PC.
Right. So, like, for me having multiple options, there's no way I go first for Switch over my Xbox or PC. Like, there's no way.
It's also antithetical to the idea that it is a portable system.
Yes.
And you're not going to be jumping, like, on a train and getting a great online match going on with
your friends. Right. Yeah, and ideally, like, I wouldn't really want to play with the Joy-Con. So, like, my ideal setting for this, like if they do come out with this, I would really like it bundled with the Pro Controller. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes the most sense if like they have a special Call of Duty Pro Controller and they bundle it and say,
that'd
hey,
awesome.
Have this, because this is the optimal way to play it. I would assume, because I don't think playing with Joy-Con would be fun.
So,
except that it has Move controls, which
that could
interesting. So,
that's the weird thing.
I mean, potentially, it's all rumor. But
I would like to see, you know, pointer controls work. I've tried them in like World of Goo and stuff like that. That's a slow game, so I can't really tell how that would work with a first person shooter. Especially one as like quick as Call of Duty,
right?
But like, what kind of stuff from the single player side of Call of Duty, Miranda, do you think would make it over? Because I feel like taking a bunch of awesome single player stuff from Call of Duty and sort of mashing it together in this one package for Switch players for like $39.99 could be totally cool. Like zombies, maybe?
Yeah, the thing is with zombies, like you don't really want to play that on your own. Like that is definitely an experience you want with other people. And even just playing on my own with random people online, it's still a lesser experience. And, you know, of course, teaming up with your friend to solve these really intricate puzzles.
Right.
So, I mean, I could see it just paired with if you want maybe the story in zombies.
I don't think
that
would
be weird. Happen. I don't think it would. I think they're going to have everything.
Remember that, like among Call of Duty players, you're probably an outlier, right? Like you play the campaign. Most people buy Call of Duty, the annual iterations, to play multiplayer.
I mean, that's what I did all high school. Like, I just played multiplayer.
And Nintendo has a lot to prove now with that the Switch can be an online console, and that's obviously one of their big launches in September. I can't think of a better game to come out alongside that and say, see, you can do voice chat, you can do all
that. Yeah, I just think that, like, even aside from my personal preferences as a ex-Call of Duty, you know, frequent player. You have to sort of play to the strengths of the system. And I think that, like, they're going to start selling online, so they have to show and prove with that thing, right? But also, it doesn't really work with the portable aspect of that system.
Splatoon does well, though. You know?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple modes in there, like, that make it worth your time when you're offline, though.
I don't think portability is like the big sell, though, unless you're like, hey, what if we all meet up at so-and-so's house and play Call of Duty
Zombies,
together, sitting next to each other and stuff? Like, that's an ideal
experience,
cool. I think.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And that might be the direction that they're trying to go with it. I mean, I totally agree with you. Like, it doesn't make sense to, like, be excited about playing Call of Duty on a train by yourself with no Wi-Fi.
Well, look at Doom, right? Like, that was, like, a separate download just for multiplayer. Like, they sort of distanced that from the package that most people were buying.
Yeah, but COD is such a bigger game for multiplayer. No, I feel like that's got to be core.
The thing with Doom, too, is, like, it didn't need as much precision as Call of Duty requires, you know, or at least some would argue, I would argue. Call of Duty, I think, if it does end up coming to Switch, it needs to be locked at 60 frames per second to appease, like, the hardcore audience. You know, and it could, you know, like, take a hit in resolution. That would be totally fine.
Yeah.
As long as it is locked at 60 frames per second. I don't know. Would you agree that that's an important thing?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a twitchy shooter. Like, the time to kill is so fast. Like, you are respawning and dying, like, hopefully getting a lot of kills along the way. And if you mess up that cycle, then it messes up something, like, intricate to Call of Duty.
Right.
And so that stability is very important, But having seen past Call of Duty, I'm a little concerned. But like I said, if you're really serious about that, mm-hmm. then you're probably not playing it on Switch, right?
Yeah.
But I think yeah. still having that is a good feature. Like, people do want to play this, and if maybe Switch is their main thing and they want to play Call of Duty, then that's great that they could have it.
Yeah, yeah. You won't be playing crossplay with people on 4K TVs or anything like that. Yeah,
it's not like you're playing. You're all on the same playing field, essentially. Yeah, and so that evens it out.
Especially if the Switch version has motion controls, because then we'll destroy them all. I like motion aiming in Splatoon. I think it works awesome.
I don't like that.
I think it's
I'm one of the few people that doesn't. Like, everyone else I've talked to loves it, but I'm just
so much faster than pushing this thing.
I like it. I just I play a lot of Switch games, like, I don't know, like laying. I was playing Switch like the other night, just like laying in bed, and I was like this.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
And like, you can't do that. If you're listening at home, I did a weird pantomime of me holding a Switch above my head. But yeah, it doesn't work with motion controls. So
as long as the motion, if it does have motion controls, as long as they're not forced on us, or mm-hmm. like if the game works better with motion controls or something like that, I think it would be okay.
Sorry, I'm laughing because I'm imagining him lying in his bed trying to play Xbox while the TV is at the other end of the room and looking at the ceiling. Try that.
It's not working.
Yeah, a series of elaborate mirrors. Exactly. No, I think like, regardless, like, you can't be mad at this rumor. This is cool, right?
Yeah,
this is great, and I hope this happens. Like, I keep echoing Miranda here. That audience is not going to come over, but maybe you'll find a new audience on Switch. And with millions and millions there, like this, like, we keep saying this, but this conversation becomes harder and harder to ignore.
Right.
Like, if you're a developer, you want in, and if you don't, like, it feels like you're missing out. I mean, I saw Chance the Rapper the other day, who like opened up Kanye's last album, was like, "Hey, Nintendo of America, put Fortnite on Switch." And then my friend Nick Chester, who works over at Epic, was like, "Hey, hey, what's going on, man? Like, maybe we'll see what we can do." Like, people are asking, people want the biggest games to come to Switch, and that's really cool. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I adore my Switch. I play it all the time, and having the option to at least have these games on Switch is ideal.
Right.
What I can only.
Would you want Dota on there?
No, that's for PC only. It's too complex. Okay. Nothing can handle it. It's fine.
What about
you just need too many keys?
Touch screen.
That would be actual hell. Yeah. So, yeah, there's some MOBAs out there that work really well on touchscreen. Vainglory is a mobile game that is a MOBA. So, there are definitely different games fitted for that, but Dota does not belong. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Well,
okay. I mean, I don't think anyone's crying over it, but
yeah, that's true.
Well, speaking of games that we actually know are coming to Switch, or at least pieces of DLC, Fire Emblem Warriors is getting its second DLC pack next week on February 14th. It's going to be available at 4 p.m. Pacific time, and you're going to get a bunch of new skills, history maps, support conversations, new costumes, armor break models, and weapons. So definitely check that out. Are you guys playing Fire Emblem Warriors?
You still playing?
I stopped, but I'll go back to it when there's new content. Yeah, yeah. This game surprised me. I was all like, meh. You know, didn't like Hyrule Warriors that much. I made that noise all the time. And then I played this. I'm like, this is good. What the heck? Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it's cool. There's also another third DLC pack still on the way, so definitely look forward to that. It's nice to see Nintendo still supporting Fire Emblem Warriors with all this content. And also, we recently got announced that Hyrule Warriors for Switch is going to have some Breath of the Wild costumes coming to it with Amiibo support. So
I want
to
play that.
Yeah.
Never got a chance to play it because I didn't want to buy it for 3DS. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then...
Yeah, the 3DS version is not good, so you made a good move there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think you'll play it on Switch, Pear?
Yeah.
Give it a shot.
I'm going to give it another
shot. I'll play it again.
I think so.
I'll check it out.
I didn't really mess with... There's all this like Link's Awakening stuff in there. It's like my favorite Zelda game, and I missed it all, so...
Something made me cranky about that game. Like,
cranky.
For example, you're a big fan of Bokoblins, Bobo Clans, right?
Bobo Clans, yeah.
And this game has like the worst version of them. Like, I wish it was more rooted in the art style of the other games that I love so much.
Those games kind of like give me anxiety.
Yeah.
It's just like
Warriors games?
Yeah, it's just never just chill. There's always just like 200.
Oh, really? It's so chill though. You just keep
beating
them all down.
It is cathartic because they'll never kill you.
Yeah.
It's like 200
you're invincible,
just grunts.
It's fine.
Yeah, but there's all these like little alerts going on all over the map. You're like, I gotta go take care of all this.
It took over that area again.
Yeah. It's very whack-a-mole.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, but I found those games strangely relaxing.
Mm-hmm. It's because you don't care about the people. You're like, let them die.
Kind of actually, yeah.
You care.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I mean, that's how I play Samurai Warriors. I just like mowed down. I was like, oh, there's a big group of people over there. That's where I'm going next. I don't care about the objective.
You know, you're totally right. Like, they're both, it's like, it's this weird mix for me of like, it's like cathartic. And because I'm just like mowing down a bunch of enemies, but also like anxious because I'm just like who's going to pop up out of the ground? Like, why do I have to keep running over to this square over here? Yeah. Like, yeah. There's just a lot. There's a lot going
Once
on.
Once you get a feel for the flow of the missions, then I think you get better with that. Yep. It doesn't feel so anxious about everything or hectic. So
yeah. True.
Yeah.
Well, another game that was actually announced for Switch this week is Harvest Moon Light of Hope Special Edition. It's also coming to PS4 as well. And it was announced via the developer's Twitter account, Natsumi Inc. And they said that it's releasing in May of 2018. Now, I'm not too familiar with Harvest Moon. I haven't played too much of the series myself. Mm-hmm. Miranda, I know you're a huge Stardew Valley fan.
Yes.
Right.
I have a deep, dark secret where I've never, ever played a Harvest Moon.
You have not?
So. I know. I know. Yeah.
All right, kids.
So I was interested.
I'm legit surprised tell me what they're like.
I know, right?
So yeah. Here,
I just never had it somehow and didn't really know about it until a few years ago, and I was like, what? How did I not know about this game?
Right, right.
Like, having, like, Nintendo systems growing up, I'm just surprised my parents never got it to me.
Well, the genre definitely got a huge boost with, you know, games like Heyday, like any of these kind of, like, farming games on iOS and Android, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's when people took note of the kind of like build farm and harvest stuff genre. And Harvest Moon was a smaller franchise, but, like, they were... Some of them were really deep with RPG elements, you know, more akin to Stardew Valley.
Right.
And what in the past, these games were created by Marvelous. Marvelous was the Japanese creator behind these titles, and they were called Bokujo Monogatari, which is a farm story. And when they came to the U.S., Natsume, it's a Japanese company, but they're actually headquartered just south of San Francisco here, they brought these games to the U.S. as Harvest Moon. What happened is those two franchises split.
Mm-hmm.
So what you get now actually as Harvest Moon is a different developer in a different franchise under that name, whereas Bokujo Monogatari you will get as Story of Seasons.
Oh.
Yep.
So that's why I'm like, my anticipation of this one is – I love these games.
No,
my anticipation of this game is a little tempered. I hope that Natsume gets this right and it's a good game.
Did you see the last one?
Was not a good game.
Yes. Yeah. Also did not touch that. I was like, oh, maybe I'll try. No.
No.
It's like one of those, you go back to the older Harvest Moons and play those instead.
Right,
or
right, right, right.
Just so play 30s.
Games are only as strong as the developers behind them, right? And that was a different team. So I'm hoping they can bring it with this one. I don't know if they have the rights to any of the code from the old games even. Mm-hmm. That'd be just, even adapting Harvest Moon 64 would
right,
be
like
such a freaking great game.
Right.
That's what I was hoping for would happen sometime mm-hmm. soon. Maybe someday. Like, honestly, I just want to go play those games, but I can't really easily now.
No. You really like them, yeah.
Yeah.
I think if this is done well, they have potential to sell a lot of copies of this game. Because if you look at Stardew Valley, that topped the charts for a while on the eShop. There's no Animal Crossing coming out anytime soon that we know of. Hopefully that gets announced soon. And I think people are looking for just like a kind of like chilled out sort of farm/town building game.
Yep.
And it works really well, you know, in portable form. It's like you pop in, plant some trees, get out.
I just wonder if that ship has sailed and Stardew kind of supplanted it.
Because
Stardew does a lot of the stuff from the Harvest Moon games. I mean, like, even like in the games in the 90s, you could do like light exploration, get married, you know, have livestock, harvest things, water things. Like, all of that was always in the franchise. Stardew does all of that, and it does it in some cases a little better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are some PC games that are coming out in that same vein of Stardew Valley.
Yep.
There's a new one that's in early access right now that I actually got to play called My Time at Portia.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a more so building. I guess that you do farming eventually, but for I got, you just like build stuff and you have relationships with these town people. You can play rock, paper, scissors for whatever reason. It does have a lot of that, those like more just life themes of just building up this town and working with them, and there were like protests for nature and it seemed like a little bit more like the next step of Stardew in a way,
right?
And so like seeing these games pop up more and more just means that Harvest Moon as like its original form still has a lot more competition, and like if this one can't really, you know, prove itself to be a good iteration on that, then I think they'll have some trouble selling it going forward.
Yeah.
Unless they bring back the old ones, then it'll be revived.
That would be tough to make up and connect them again. But I'm keeping an eye out. I'm curious to see what they come up with.
Yeah, me too. I'm very interested in this. I like Stardew Valley a lot, so I'm hoping that this is finally the Harvest Moon that gets me, that, like, you know, welcomes me into the series. But one last thing before we get into our big topic. Starting in early March, we're finally going to be able to redeem gold points From digital and physical purchase to earn 5% of the money back, I guess, that we pay, right?
Yeah,
and
specifically through My Nintendo.
Right, through My Nintendo rewards.
This is they are at the finish line on this because – or the, this is a buzzer beater because if you bought a Switch last March and you redeemed it, your coins for that Switch are about to expire. And there's been nothing to buy for your Switch specifically with them. You can only buy like 3DS themes and like Wii U downloadable games and stuff like that. Discounts on Wii games. Like stuff that you're just kind of like, hey, that's nice, but I got a Switch.
Yeah, yeah, they've had the Switch icon, I think, grayed out for a very long time. Yeah. It's just like, when is this going to be implemented?
Yeah, and when you go on your Switch, like there's that little theme button, and you can go there, and it's black or white. And you're like, that's a start. Yeah, let me get some more. So this is kind of cool. The weird thing is that if you have 100 points, it's basically 100 cents. Is it a dollar? I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Because it was a 1-to-1 euro to point transaction thing in the European press release for this. So if you have 1,000 points, you can get $10 and you can get a $10 game.
You seem to be really into this cryptocurrency.
I'm really, yeah. Really into My Nintendo cryptocurrency. Yeah. I think it's going to blow up.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be the next big thing.
No, yeah. I think
all the kids are using it.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. To buy black or white buttons.
No, I've always been a fan of My Nintendo. It's something I check in on all the time. It's weird because it's like, you know, Sony has PlayStation rewards and you can't really find them. You have to dig around for them. Every now and then they'll email you and be like, hey, here's a 20% off or 30% off coupon. Xbox, less so. They have a couple little like rewardy type things.
I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, not really, right? But Nintendo has this system, which is never great, but it's something.
I feel like Nintendo's is the most present of the other systems. Like, I know they exist. Mm-hmm. I just don't really know how to find out much about them or don't really care enough to because there's never really been an incentive for that.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Good way of putting it. And so, like, with My Nintendo, like, you see that integration, like, you see that logo in places. You see it, like, when you redeem a coupon or a game or something like that, points will pop up. It speaks into all of their mobile offerings. So Mario, Fire Emblem, Animal Crossing all have these, like, little tie-ins to My Nintendo, where you can go and redeem points and get like 5,000 bells and Animal Crossing and whatever you want to do. But in terms of like tangible physical rewards, this is a program that was really cool for a while way back in the day. I had got like a Mario statue and a Luigi statue, and they had like weird 3DS cases and all this other stuff, and then all that went away. So hopefully this is baby steps and they'll go back to doing cool stuff again, but it's a start.
Nice. Very cool. So yeah, let's get into our main topic, I guess, for this segment. I know that a lot of you guys are curious to hear what Nintendo Labo is actually like. So I did get a chance to get some hands-on time with the fabled Toy-Con creations.
Did they give you a box and you had to open it? You got to smell it? Or was it like on the table already? Like, how did you smell cardboard?
So yeah, let me just like walk you guys through the whole thing. I mean, it was really cool. So the event that I went to was in New York City. It was taking place at the we're seeing some B-roll for those of you watching the video podcast. So yeah, that's actually me and my son, Keegan, building Labo together. So we're working on we got to build the RC car and the fishing rod. So we're seeing footage of the RC car on
which
the video
was
right
a,
now.
Okay, so he decked it out. He made it look awesome. Or was that you?
No, that was totally him.
Oh,
that
right. Him, yeah. Okay. So wait, he put googly
eyes on,
it?
On its butt?
And so that was a relatively simple build, right? You said that only took you a few minutes.
Right. So when you buy the variety pack, you get actually two RC cars, which is cool because it actually includes a multiplayer mode as well. Mm-hmm. So you can race with your friends on a single Switch, which is very interesting. And it actually works really well as well. So the first RC car that we built took us around 10 minutes, maybe 12 minutes. And then the second one, I built it by myself, took me like, I want to say 30 seconds to a minute.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it's basically the RC car is one piece that you pop out and then you just kind of fold it all together. Mm-hmm. But as you can see on screen right now, if you're watching the video, I'm assembling the fishing rod here, and it's way more complex. It's got so many more moving parts in it, and You can see it's got a string in there as well. There's like rubber bands.
It's awesome.
But it's really, it's all there for a purpose. Like the rubber bands are there in particular to give that feeling of resistance. You can see I'm pulling up there, or Keegan's actually pulling up. And it's fun. I mean, it really does feel like you're pulling something out of the water when you have your Switch in there. And the game that they have for this is essentially a fishing game where you can dip your rod in the water and you lower it.
This is so weird.
It's very weird, but it's fun. You lower it into the ocean, and then you can lower it deeper and deep as you want to go, essentially, until it gets all black. And then from the deepest parts of the ocean, you can pull out like sharks and lanternfish and lots of weird stuff. It keeps records, so you can go back and try and beat your, you know, old scores and stuff. And you're seeing more footage of the piano going on before you saw the house, the Toy-Con Creation house. We didn't get a chance to build that stuff. Those would take a little bit longer than the time that they actually gave us at the event.
So there's the shot.
We built the pre-made, or we actually just played with pre-made Toy-Cons. But this right here, what we're seeing on screen right now, was my favorite from the variety pack.
Which the is motorcycle?
The motorcycle, yeah. And I thought it was actually one of the more interesting ones, too, because it really showed what I felt like was a real game inside of Labo. But it felt like a hacked up modded version of Mario Kart 8. Like they took a level or a vertical splice of it and took the Miis from there. And then you basically are just playing around like a modded version of the Excitebyte level from Mario
Kart 8. Oh,
really? Yeah.
And it felt like that? Did it feel different, like with more spring to it or no? No. It felt like Mario Kart?
It felt like Mario Kart with motion controls. Okay. Yeah, but you're using that, obviously.
So one of the mysteries of this, all the software, is that Nintendo was being coy about who the developer was. Mm-hmm. They didn't tell anybody. Did you see anything during the startup screen or anything?
No, no.
I think people are like saying, I hope it's not retro, right? Like it's the old, like, remember when Microsoft bought Rare and then put them to work on Miis, essentially, on the Xbox, right? People don't want that. Like, even though some of the software may be cool, they don't want to hear that one of their favorite developers is toiling away at adapting Mario Kart.
Can I tell you a little secret about Switch preview events? There's been like two or three times where I've accidentally hit the home button during a Switch preview event, and like,
accidentally.
Yeah, and like four people are like, whoa, no, nothing to see, you gotta go. And I'm like, oh, what's going on here?
I gotta think it's NST. Like Nintendo Software Technology in Seattle and in Redmond. Like we haven't seen much from them. I gotta think they're making these kind of smaller experiences and maybe that's what they focused on. But who knows, could be from Japan too.
It didn't
look that bad, though. Like, I saw some of the side-scrolling stuff. Like, graphically, it does not look like they farted this out.
No, not at all. I mean, even the smaller games, like the Toy-Con house thing is a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I was wondering about that. Like, what do you do? Like, what is
with the
that?
House?
Yeah, it's just like a house.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. It looks simple. It's like a house. But essentially what it is it's a giant nano pet or like a giant Gigapet or whatever they were called back from like the late 90s.
I don't know what that is.
It's Tamagotchi?
Yeah, like a Tamagotchi. Exactly.
Yeah, I know what that is.
It's a giant Tamagotchi.
Oh my gosh, it's perfect.
It's this house and you put your Switch tablet in the front and then obviously that creates the illusion that there's like this gerbil-like thing living in there. And so on the sides of the Toy-Con box and on the bottom and on the top are little slots that you can put interchangeable parts. You can see it on screen right now. And so those different parts, with whatever combination you put on each side, activates a different game. And so right there, I got a chance to play, or Keegan was playing, the minecart game, which felt a lot like something from Donkey Kong, which is really cool. So you bop the sides.
Maybe it is retro.
So cool. Well, I mean, honestly, it would be cool to see bigger developers getting a chance to make something for this. Like, I think it's a really interesting
There's a lot
project.
Of potential here.
Like, yeah, it's like, what if some studio just wants to, like, try it? Like, why not, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Let them loose, see what they can do and see what they can make. And that's just an awesome experience.
It's kind of funny. Do you guys remember the movie Big?
Yeah.
There's this whole sequence where Tom Hanks, who is a kid in a grown-up's body, is being asked his opinion on toys, and he's super upset that they're making him play with a building. Mm-hmm. There's a toy that like transforms into a building. He's like, who would want to play with a building? They're doing it.
They're doing it.
They're making you play with a little house.
But Per, what else did he do in that movie? He played a piano.
We don't want to talk about that. He did play a piano.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And it took place in New York City, where Philip went last week to play with Labo. So it's all coming together.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Labo is an... Tom Hanks made these games.
It's a big
Tom Hanks made these games.
Tom Hanks is the developer behind every Labo game.
It's This is insane.
Yeah.
Huge conspiracy broken here on NBC.
You solved it.
You heard it here
first. But you had fun. Did any of the older kids beat you up when you were wearing that backpack? Or?
No, but I did almost accidentally punch one of the attendants in the face when I was playing the robot.
No.
Yeah, it went right next to their jaw.
Oh, man.
Boom.
That's
very
embarrassing. You have to write a letter of apology to Nintendo.
Did that like robot backpack punching glove visor thing, did that feel sturdy? Like, did it feel like something you could tear through after a couple uses?
Actually, if you treat it with enough respect, it seems like it'll hold together. But, you know, the whole concept of Nintendo wanting to customize these things and put a bunch of tape all over it, like, mm-hmm. that makes a lot of sense. Put a bunch of tape all over it, you know, like, otherwise it could potentially fall apart. Look at that.
Yeah.
I'm super happy.
Yeah.
It does look like first day of school.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right?
I love it.
Ready to go with my new backpack.
Speaking of hamsters, I think you can keep one in that backpack because there's breathing holes. It looks like you could carry escape. Yeah.
It's too big.
If you do have like doubts about how the robot kit in particular works, I can tell you right here, right now, it does work. It feels really good. I was moving my character, you know, with my own body movements, lifting my legs up to walk around, and the character on screen was moving in accordance to how I was as well. So
nice. And it felt right.
Right. Like, and what I had told Brian before is that this was really like almost like the first time I had a similar feeling doing this as the first time I played VR. It gave me this sense of presence inside of the video game, which was really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited that we're going to have something like that on Switch and that it actually works. So, yeah, I mean, we'll find out more together on April 20th.
So,
yeah.
One last question.
Absolutely.
Is the cardboard sturdy? Like, how does it feel?
It feels like cardboard.
I could imagine that.
No, it's like thin cardboard.
Video game journalism.
It's definitely sturdy. Like, you do a bunch of folding and creasing of the cardboard, and I will say that for an 8-year-old's fingers, it gets pretty exhausting, even for my own.
That's good to hear, though.
Your own 8-year-old
fingers. That was
my
good
own
to hear.
8-year-old
no,
fingers.
Yeah, because, like, I want it to be sturdy enough, because I have cats, and they're going to definitely pounce on this stuff.
Oh.
So, I mean, I can hide it as much as I want, but they're still going
to
play with it.
I thought you were like, that's good to hear. I love exhausting 8-year-old
No, but, I mean, obviously you can repair it yourself and stuff, but you want it to work for a long time, ideally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And obviously the other big question that we can't answer yet is that Nintendo will have some sort of solution available for getting basically second kits in case you burn through your first or tear them apart. We don't exactly know what that looks like. There will be a replacement kit option in case, you know, you completely destroy it, which happens, especially once, like, you break out the scissors and tape and
Mr. Scissors is the enemy of the lab.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't let Mr. Scissors
friend.
In.
Make something creative.
By the way, I was super distracted by your phone case. What the hell is that?
It's a substitute plush from Pokemon.
Oh.
Substitute your Pokemon. So
It has a belly? Like a little.
It's like all protrude.
That's pretty amazing.
There you go. That's beautiful.
I just have a regular.
We
I feel boring now.
Talk about ToyCon Garage.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We do have to mention ToyCon Garage.
Speaking of scissors.
Yeah, that is arguably the most exciting piece of this whole thing. So ToyCon Garage is Nintendo's sort of plan on how they're going to make Labo last long term and how we can make Labo really our own customizations. Because with ToyCon Garage, we can actually create our own ToyCons. So what they showed us is how they were able to take like the piano sounds or like what the same concept of the piano was and put all of those musical sounds into another instrument, and they brought out a cardboard guitar, which is obviously something that we had never seen before.
But a custom built, presumably.
Totally custom built, very not as nice looking as the piano. It wasn't like all 3D-ified. It was literally like cut out of cardboard with a switch just like slapped on there. And
did it have strings?
No, it didn't have strings. The guy was strumming the screen of the
switch. Oh.
Yeah, and so the way that whole thing works is people will actually be able to program their own Labo creations using Nodes. That's the programming software that Labo is going to use, or ToyCon Garage is going to use, which is a simple form of programming. And they're saying that children will be able to do this.
That is so awesome.
Yeah. So I could see that getting really big, like with schools.
Code clubs. Like they're coding clubs at schools often where you can learn how to code simple things. And like this seems to be kind of an extension of what they want to do with Wario, right? Like they wanted to give you tools to create your own stuff.
Right.
Which, like, this is one step more because you build physical objects too.
Which they made a Wario game where WarioWare Do It Yourself,
where
they had a bunch of developers made mini games, like people from all around the industry, and if we see something like that again, that'd be really cool.
I think that's awesome. Yeah, I'm actually surprised they didn't put Slap Wario on this franchise.
One thing
he's scary.
Yeah,
thing too that they did was they rewired it so that the motorcycle handlebars were actually controlling the RC car, so you could actually use that. In conjunction with the RC car. So different ideas like that. There you go. If you don't know what the motorcycle looks like, you can see it right now on screen in
there
that
it
famous
is.
Picture of me. I don't look as happy in that picture, though.
No, but very,
very concentrated.
Concentrated.
Yeah.
We
concentrated.
All love the microphone resting at the wall.
Yep.
I'm not leaving my mic behind.
Alrighty. Well, thank you very much, Miranda and Brian, for joining us.
Sure.
We're
going to
take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Zach and, I believe, Jonathan Dornbush.
Sweet.
See you in a minute.
Listen!
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. It's gotten increasingly difficult to try games before you buy them, but Gamefly lets you take your pick from a library of over 9,000 titles, including the biggest new releases like Super Mario Odyssey, NBA 2K18, Fire Emblem Warriors, and many, many more. Gamefly will ship these games to you, and you can keep them as long as you want. There are no late fees or due dates, and shipping is always free. This breaks down to as little as 54 cents a day. So ask yourself, how many moons can you find in Super Mario Odyssey for 54 cents a day? Oh, and you don't even have to leave the house. The games come right to you. And hey, they rent movies too. Normally, a Gamefly trial lets you only check out one game at a time, but if you head to Gamefly.com/voicechat, you can sign up for a free premium 30-day trial that lets you check out two games or movies at a time. Try it out today at Gamefly.com/voicechat.
Here we go! Welcome back to the second half of Nintendo Voice Chat, and replacing Miranda and Brian is Jonathan Dornbush and Zachary Ryan. Sorry, I was distracted by all the magic happening on the side of my face here. Uh-huh. Oh, man. All right. Well, how are you guys doing, Ben? Over there.
Yeah? That's a video exclusive. For right, you'll have to see what he's talking about on the video episode.
Yeah, great to have you back.
Here. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Totally threw him off his guns.
Yeah,
it was like a James Bond opening.
But you guys have joined us to talk a little bit about some games, some new releases coming out this week. But then also, I played a bunch of games at a private Nintendo event last week, which
brag
was really
about
cool.
It, man.
Fancy pen.
Yeah, some of those games you guys, or we all do have in office now, like Owl Boy, which is the first game that I actually wanted to touch on and see who here has actually played Owl Boy.
I'm playing Owl Boy right now. Have you guys not played it?
I haven't gotten started yet, but I really want to. Yeah,
Owl Boy is, we talked a little bit about it with Chloe last week. It came out on PC at the end of 2016, but now it's on Switch, which to me is like the perfect fit. It's this gorgeous 2D sort of open world platformer, kind of a, like, I know you guys are going to get mad for saying it, but it's a Metroidvania sort of
deal.
Oh, what
are those?
I know. Uh-huh. I know. But yeah, this was developed by a super small team. It was in development for close to 7 years.
Yeah.
And now it's finally kind of starting to make the rounds. It was a PC exclusive for a while. Now it's on Switch and other platforms. But I've played about an hour and a half, 2 hours of this game, and it is gorgeous and super cool. One of the things that I really love about it, first of all, it feels like a long lost Super Nintendo game.
Yeah,
it reminds me of like Square's heyday of 16-bit games.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because your protagonist is mute. He doesn't talk, but there's all these other characters that kind of fill in the story for you. And you can see, if you're watching the video footage here, you can see that one of the main ways that you attack in this game is that you carry your buddy with you. You pick him up with your claws, your owl feet, and then your friend there shoots his gun at enemies and stuff. But it's really interesting. It's an interesting take on power-ups, right? Like it's not necessarily like, oh, hey, now you've gained the gun. Like it's you carry your buddy around, and then he's going on this adventure with you. And it's just like a super sweet, endearing game, and really, really fun to play. It's got very light puzzle solving. Mm-hmm. From what I can tell so far, but I'm really digging it. It's super cool.
It's awesome. Yeah, Chloe really liked it too.
She gave it a 9.3 back in the day. Yeah, back in the day. I guess in 2016.
Way back when.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm actually, I just did all this stuff this morning when I was playing through it. If you're watching the video, you can see here the, sort of the mechanics, and this is the first boss fight in the game. And it's interesting because it's kind of got a Metroid feel here too, where you need to complete certain things in order to fight enemies in different ways, like a kind of a Zelda feel here. You need to knock off the mask and then shoot them with your buddy, you know, so.
Reminds me a little bit of Demon's Crest, if you remember those games, like the Capcom offshoots from Ghosts and Ghosts. And
I don't remember. Yeah.
Like just the, you know, the art style, like the kind of like the style of 16-bit drawings.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. The art is gorgeous. Like the depth of field that you get from just looking at a single screen is kind of incredible.
Yeah. It's really cool. I really love that sort of advanced 16-bit look. You know, it's like they're obviously going for a Super Nintendo style pixel art, but it's not something that could have been ever done on you know, there's no Super Nintendo game that looks like that.
That's cool.
I just really love the way that looks. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I've had it like I said, I played it last week and I've had it for a couple days now and I'm so excited about
it. You played it at the event as well.
Yeah. 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 It's just really cool. I love the way it controls. Uh-huh. At first I was a little hesitant about it. I was like, I don't know how this feels. Like I gotta carry a guy around.
It feels almost like a twin stick shooter a little bit. Yeah.
But it has like a lock on too, which is helpful, So definitely recommend checking it out.
Yeah. I'll get it.
Yeah. Once it comes, it's coming out on February 13th, which is next week.
Buy it for someone you love.
Yes. But another game that I did actually get to play.
Poor Jonathan, his Switch got stolen.
Yeah, well, I had a code for Owlboy, and then that day, my Switch got stolen.
Oh,
so, yeah, not the best timing. I had that and Dandara all ready to go. And then my Switch got stolen, unfortunately, while I was out at dinner, and just the worst timing of, like, I had that evening plan to play all those games, and it just didn't work
out. So if anybody sees somebody with a Switch with Owlboy and Dandara on it, it's stolen?
Yeah.
Or that person just has really good tasting.
Yeah, that too. And just an absurd amount of hours in Mario plus Rabbids. Yeah. That's my Switch, then. Yeah. There's like 100 Mario plus Rabbids hours.
Too bad that you probably have the boring Joy-Con.
I had my red and blue.
Sorry,
not the best. So I'm looking forward to playing all these games.
But yeah, another game that I did get a chance to check out last week on Switch was Fae. I was told by the developer.
Fae?
No, Fee is what
Fee?
He told me. Yes.
I've heard people have been also told Fae.
Fee and Fae.
Really?
Around the office, it usually results in a chorus of people going Fae.
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 I mean, I call it Fae. I've been calling it Fae. I'm just going to stick with that. But I did get a chance to put some time in it, and what you guys are watching right now is not my gameplay, but it's the part of the game that I did play. Yeah, why is it such a...
This looks crummy. If you're watching the video version, please note that this game doesn't usually look this artifact.
But this is the Switch version.
Barrett,
this is the Switch version. Yeah, the Switch version, obviously, the resolution is much better than what you're seeing. I don't know why it's... Very crappy, but I'll have a link in the description of this video if you are interested in seeing what that gameplay does look like, because the game is very interesting.
Cool.
The game is totally way more than what I had initially expected it to be. Yeah, it's got all these elements of, like, The Legend of Zelda and even something like Shadow of the Colossus. Yeah, like put together, but it's not too much of anything.
In what way is it like Shadow?
There's actually like Colossus walking around this game.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I don't know that we've seen any of that.
Yeah. I thought it was a Zeldavania, so it's more like a Colossus Zelda? Or what?
Colossus Zeldavania.
It's got that Vania twist in it too, because there's a little bit of backtracking that you'll do in this game as well. So here, like what you do in the game essentially is you play as a fairy in a forest.
And a fae.
Which is fae or fea or
in German
whatever,
fairy is fae, by the way. But this is not German.
No, but in Swedish, it's fairy as well.
There you go.
So that's why. Yeah. You play as a fairy in a forest, and there's no real combat in the game, but there are enemies. Okay. So you can die. There is death. Most of your time playing the game, you'll basically be doing a lot of exploring, some stealth mechanics as well, and then also climbing colossus type animals. I'm not exactly sure what they are.
Right.
But you also learn different languages to communicate with the world, which is also another really interesting mechanic that I haven't seen, and it uses the Switch's motion controls.
Oh, cool.
Which is cool, yeah. Nice. So, like, you'll meet an animal, like a deer, for instance, and then the deer will teach you a language, and you'll have to tune in with that deer using motion controls, which feels cool.
Because the language is like musical. Or
right.
It's like sound based. It's not like language, like words being used, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, like I got a Journey vibe from at least that type of like communication is done by sounds, not just words, specific words.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so
and, sounds really cool.
Yeah, and you learn these different languages to unlock different parts of the game that, or not unlock different parts of the game, but that'll get you to new areas.
Yeah,
that you
need cool.
to
stuff that's gated off. You need to find
right. Like, so there's minor and backtracking yeah. and stuff, but yeah. It's looks like it's warming up to be a pretty good game. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how big of a game it is, but I'm very curious, and it's running really well on Switch.
Sweet.
So
that's really
nice.
Cool.
Yeah, very good stuff.
Check it out. February 16th.
February 16th for that one. That's also Fit. Next.
From Zoink, Fit. Right?
From Zoink, yeah.
Which is now part of
EA
it's
Originals,
their. Well, didn't they combine with Image and Form?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah you're right.
So now they're that like combined company.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so another game that I did get a chance to check out next or last week was Bayonetta 2.
I've heard of
Switch.
That.
Mm. Yes. This is a very interesting game. Let's start there.
Yeah. Did you play it when it came out before, or is this the first time?
So I played a little bit of Bayonetta 2 on Wii U, yeah. but it was just over at friends' houses. I never put too much time into the game, but I've always, always wanted to play it. So I did a bunch of research about the series. I know a lot about it myself, just from like obviously being a huge Nintendo fan. But I also... I'm a little disappointed with the lack of Switch exclusive features or new features that they're bringing over to the Switch, because the game is essentially a perfect port of Bayonetta 2 from the Wii U over to Switch. It's locked at 60 frames per second, so we're not going to have any slowdowns in frame rate like we had with Bayonetta 2 on Wii U. But the frame rate, or I'm sorry, the resolution is still 720p, docked and undocked.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're going to be watching it in 720p, playing it in 720p. But I will say that on the big, you know, 60-inch HD TV that I was playing it on, it didn't look bad at all. It looked really good.
It's buttery smooth. So the one thing about both the Bayonetta games is that they do improbably big things on screen at a super smooth frame rate.
Yeah,
like
right.
giant freaking things moving yeah. around on the screen. And it's really impressive to see, even if the resolution takes a bit of a hit.
Right. So there's also amiibo support. You're going to be able to use 32 amiibo a day to unlock costumes.
Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's for me.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're into
we'll be visiting Paris Desk again every day.
Grinding Halos or something like that. Like, that's a really great use for that. Yeah, I mean, it's Bayonetta 2. It's coming to Switch. 60 frames per second locked. It feels really, really good. And I'm just I'm really excited to play this game all the way through, finally, for the first time. So
yeah.
Have you guys played Bayonetta?
Yeah, I played Bayonetta. I played both Bayonetta games on Wii U. I mean, I love character action games like this. Platinum mm-hmm. is one of my favorite developers, and really, really love Bayonetta 2 especially. I think it's super fun and challenging, and just it's a crazy game made for insane people, because it's mm-hmm. just all this eye-popping, like, battle and, you know, like Paris saying these, like, giant enemies.
The scales,
yeah. Yeah, and you're flipping around and shooting guns and kicking people in the face, and it's just nuts. Like, it's, yeah, that's an anime-ass game. But, and I should say, we made the mistake last week talking about the games not being able for purchase together, but you can get them together.
Right.
If you buy Bayonetta 2, you get a code for Bayonetta 1, vice versa.
Right.
$450, right?
Right, yeah. If you buy the $50 one. Yeah, so not vice versa, but we were a little confused last week and said that Brian said it was only available as a package deal in Japan, which is not the case.
Right, yeah, so it doesn't matter if you buy it digitally or if you buy it physically, you should be getting a code. If you buy Bayonetta 2
right,
digitally,
if you buy Bayonetta 2.
You get Bayonetta 1 as a code as well.
If you like, I mean, if Platinum, I feel like, is like the modern descendant of Treasure. If you remember
yeah,
that company, they right. made games like Gunstar Heroes, and yeah. before that they were the Konami Dream
yeah.
team that gave us some of the best Konami side-scrollers. And like, they just never cared about whether something would sell. They just create something that interests them.
Yeah.
And I feel like these guys are right up that alley. So support Platinum Games if you want to see more of that stuff.
Platinum, to me, has always been the developer that I feel like missed the boat on the Sega Dreamcast. Like, all the weird batshit games. Oops, sorry.
Wonderful 101.
All the weird, like crazy games that they were experimenting with on the Dreamcast in the early 2000s, like, to an extent, Platinum still makes those kind of games. Like, they're like a higher resolution, but like kind of a similar look and feel, and they're just like really weird and out there and very, very Japanese. So, like, yeah, I'm a big fan of the Dreamcast and big fan of Platinum.
Yep.
Yeah, so some more games. Let's talk about some games that we're playing this week. What have you guys been playing this week? Have any of you been playing Dendara?
Yes. Yeah, I started Dendara. We introduced it a little bit last week, but I don't think we showed footage of it. It's a Metroidvania. You know what? I really hate that term, too.
I'm going to get that tattooed across my chest in like old English.
And by the way, if you
just any time it comes up.
If you're wondering why it's not Metroid-like or Castlevania-like, it's because those two games were in development at the same time, so nobody can agree on who invented that formula.
There is,
but I actually think it's probably wrong, because I'm sure there were like computer games that did that sort of progression and exploration before them.
There is this sort of hotly disputed thing about what makes a Metroidvania, right? Like, is it the way that you move through the levels? Is it the sense of like backtracking and finding secrets? Or like, does there have to be some sort of character progression? Like, are you leveling up? Are you finding new gear to increase stats?
That lets you.
And I think like some culmination of those three sort of pillars are what makes a Metroidvania. I feel like the way that we describe Metroidvania a lot on this show in particular is like more the former than the latter, in that it's a lot of open areas that you can kind of look and find secrets, and there might not necessarily be like RPG stats. But,
and then you get a tool and come back and progress, right? Yeah. So Metroid, Shadow Complex, that ilk, which this game feels very different. I actually think it has those exploration aspects where the game opens up, but it feels a little bit more like a puzzle game. Yeah. If you've played VR games where when you walk through 3D space in VR, you're likely to hurl. So what companies did more recently is like to let you point at a spot in the ground, and you know, Bethesda does that now with VR, and then you warp to it, and that doesn't get you sick. This game uses that sort of feature where you point at a wall, but it's in 2D, and then your character jumps there, but you have full control over where you shoot while you explore like that. And so it becomes a little bit more puzzly, where you like move back and forth between two different like ceiling and floor or platforms in order to take out an enemy. And you know, then it has a really interesting art style. As I hope you saw in the footage if you watched this.
That's right. Yeah, I haven't had an opportunity to play Dendara yet, but I was watching some of the gameplay footage that we've posted, you know, and it it looks super cool.
Yeah.
I really love the locomotion through these levels and the way you're kind of ricocheting off of things, and the way that you're not seeing it here, but in a lot of the trailers that are out for this game, you see these environments that look sort of like this, but they're also rotating. Like, parts are rotating within a greater rotating room, and like it looks like it would get very challenging and disorienting the later in the game that you get. So I'm really into that.
Yeah, Pear hit it right on the head, I think, when he said that it feels a lot like a puzzle game, because that's exactly what it feels like for me. Minus, of course, the combat, which you're seeing right now if you're watching the video podcast. The combat feels okay, but the boss battles are a lot of fun.
Okay.
Yeah, they have some very interesting mechanics, especially once you get to the boss battles. I wasn't expecting that level of like sort of depth and the different stages and all that stuff. Like, I don't want to spoil it too much for anyone, but you sort of climb some of these bosses in the way that you climb the platforms in the game. So,
Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, another
one. Which, by the way, I finished the PS4 version. It's so good.
Yeah, I have like two or three Colossi left in the remake, and that might be the best looking game I've ever seen.
Oh, so gorgeous. Anyway, like I like it. I don't love it. I got to say that. Right. And that's because – but that's more like I think that's a personal preference thing, where I inherently like games where I explore. I walk around. I jump. I explore that way. I'm never that big on these games where I have to tilt the screen or I have to point at things. It's just a personal thing. But like it is a cool puzzle game, and like it looks very simple to get from platform to platform. But the beam that you can point has a range, right? And so same as your shots. So it gets more complex as to how you solve these puzzles and take out the enemies. So it seems to be a good game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I've been playing a little bit of Aegis Defenders.
Yeah, me too.
You guys been playing that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't get a chance to play the co-op mode.
All your fault.
Is exclusive.
We were going to play it. I know. We just kept on missing each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Per and I were supposed to play it. But yeah, I don't know. We all played it separately, I guess. And so I like it. I think it's pretty cool. It's a lot harder than I expected it to be, at least when you play by yourself. Yeah. But I really like the whole idea of combining these genres of like a platformer and a tower defense style game. It just works. It works really well, or at least from what I've played of it.
It's a little bit like Lost Vikings, in that you have characters that are split up, right? Yeah. Obviously working together in co-op mode. Mm-hmm. You can do that too, but then you can you get to these points where you have to defend an area, and you have to use your resources that you can mine during the stages to build a defense turret or some, you know, you get more and more contraptions. And then you have to survive the waves that come in. I really love that element. I thought that was really cool.
I've been loving the I'm a huge like tower defense person. When the iPhone first happened, there were like 1,000 tower defense games. I downloaded as many as I could, and this feels just like a really solid blend of like resource management with trying to figure out like the optimal paths that you want to do, because some of the levels will have platforms during the tower defense sessions that will crumble in between waves, and you have to counteract that because your strategy for one wave may not work in the second wave. And it's a nice twist as you're going through to keep up that tension and not just make it feel like, oh, I know they're all going to come out of that sort of entryway, so I'll just buff there and we'll be fine.
And you know, just like a lot of indie games, kind of simple presentation, you know, more kind of leaning on the 16-bit style look. Very colorful, though. But I'm enjoying this. We should say at this point, by the way, that this is published by Humble Bundle.
Yes.
And IGN and Humble Bundle are owned by the same company. So just for disclosure, that doesn't mean that we collaborate on anything. We got the game just like we get any other game from any other publisher. And, you know, we don't control what they do, and they don't control editorial. But we want you guys to know.
We do have a cool news story up about it, which I wrote. Plug about how Pikmin, Persona, and Overcooked inspired the game. The devs talked to us about how like all those disparate franchises. Yeah, it's such a weird listing of games. When I just read that, I was like, I really want to play this game now. Because
how does Overcooked fit in collaboration?
The idea that they wanted people. They realized when they were testing it that people weren't wanting to collaborate as much. So there's a fusion system where the character who's dressed in blue and the character who's dressed in yellow, if you combine your items, it gets you a different item, like a better item. And so they realized, like, using this sort of cooperative system encouraged people to play with each other more instead of just doing their own thing in different corners.
I mean, like, when you look at these games, visually, they all look very similar. A lot of these side-scrollers look very similar, but, like, just, you know, Dundara and Aegis Defenders, they're so different gameplay-wise. Pretty cool.
Yeah, completely. So our pick of the week this week, we've been starting this new thing on NVC where we sort of come together and we all decide what our favorite game was of the week. And I think we all agree that Dragon Quest Builders is probably the most interesting or exciting, our favorite game to come out this week. So I've played a bunch of this game. I played a bunch of the demo, but I played a whole bunch of the original game when it came out back on like PS4 and PS Vita. So Zach, what do you think of it? I know you're a fan.
So it's really funny. Per was kind of giving me, he's kind of burned me last week because I was describing it, I was like, oh, I'm not really into Minecraft. And I've never been into the Dragon Quest series. He's like, oh, this seems like a real perfect fit for you. This game to me is, it's kind of funny that you had mentioned the Square, like late era Square stuff on the SNES, because the combat stuff in this game sort of feels to me something like Secret of Mana, or, you know, it's an action RPG, but you have this whole other building mechanic. Like, you're building up a fort, you're building up a town, and more people come to it as it gets bigger.
So like ActRaiser a little bit, it's a little piece of every game genre in there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really am enjoying my time with it. Like, I really love it a lot. The building is really simple. Like, one thing that I love that they do is they give you a blueprint for stuff. So early on in the game especially, it teaches you sort of organically how to format your rooms to build, you know, like build things outward. So I really, really dig that. And the combat, for as simple as it is surprisingly fun. Like, it feels to me like, you know, I made the square comparison, but it's kind of like this weird hybrid of Zelda and Minecraft. And like, I just really dig it.
Yeah.
I'm really into it. I have a long flight tomorrow. I've got about a 10-hour flight, and I'm going to sink a bunch of time into Dragon
Quest. Flying to Japan.
I am.
You're going to take the game back home where it came from.
That's right. And then I'll show them. I'll say, look, here it is.
Yeah.
Return from whence you came, and fling my Switch into the ocean.
Yes. No,
I'll take that if you're going to. Yeah, I'll take that.
Sorry, bud.
Before we wrap things up, let's just quickly go over some of the new games releasing this week. Of course, like we just mentioned, Dragon Quest Builders, that game came out today. Other games that came out, Black Hole, Dandara, Aegis Defenders, The Dark Side Detective, Mercenary Kings Reloaded, which was also originally released on like PS4 and Vita
Years ago, right? 2014, I think, yeah.
Disc Jam as well, and Aperion Cyberstorm. So definitely check those out. Disc Jam, I want to say, have you guys ever played Wind Jammers?
Yes.
Okay, so I played a little bit of Disc Jam this morning because we just got codes this morning sent to us. And it's a lot like Wind Jammers.
Okay.
A lot like Wind Jammers. So
jam's right there in the title.
Yeah. So I don't know. If you don't know what that game is, I highly recommend you look it up. It's a really fun game. So check it out. Let's jump into question block. Let's take a look. Let's see who. Yeah, so this email comes from us from our email, nvc@ign.com, and it's from Jacob M. from Rogers, Arkansas. Jacob says, "Hey, NVC crew, I am a gamer who is short on two things, time and money. I was wanting to get a new game for my Switch to play over the next couple of weeks and have narrowed it down to two choices, Night in the Woods or Celeste. As a gamer, story is very important to me, and I have heard that both have an incredible story that should be experienced. Both are comparably priced, but I just don't have the time to play both right now. Which game should move to the top of my priority list?"
So tough.
Ooh, you picked two very, very different games, luckily.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think you can probably make that decision without us if we give you some pointers.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I love both of those games. For me, the gameplay of Celeste is as important to it as its story, and the themes of the story are built into the gameplay. Whereas Night in the Woods, I love Night in the Woods, but it's a much simpler thing to get your hands around as you're playing, and it's less intensive if you just want to experience that story. Obviously, there is the assist mode in Celeste, but I think if, like, for purely a story-based thing, I would say Night in the Woods.
I'm more of a Night in the Woods guy.
Yeah.
You know, I really enjoy Celeste, but it is brutally hard. And, like, I don't want to turn on assist mode. And so I will die dozens of times on some of those levels. But it has very clever dialogue woven into the side characters, the characters you encounter, whether it's, you know, this owner of this
I love the
strange
hotel.
Mr. Oshiro. Yeah. And there's a lot of fun to be had in that game, but think of it more like a challenge, like a Super Meat Boy. Whereas Night in the Woods is this kind of like sweet Wes Anderson style comedy that, you know, is also commentary on dying towns and growing up and all that. And it's like there's no challenge to it. It's like it's walking from one character to the next, doing little quests, but it's all about what the characters say. And it's just so brilliantly written. It's amazingly
the script is
written.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
I would say that Celeste is a great game with excellent story elements, and Night in the Woods is a great story with some game elements, right?
Yeah,
it's walking and jumping.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like it's totally swapped. I think if you're worried about like a time commitment, you could go either way because they're both. I feel like I put about 10 hours into both.
Yeah, for the main story.
I feel like I kind of got my fill. Yeah. But yeah, I'm with you guys. I think like if you're a story guy, go with Night in the Woods. Yeah. That's not to say that Celeste's story isn't phenomenal.
No.
But like if you're looking strictly for like a story experience, then Night in the Woods is the
best. Man, you want to meet Greg. Trust me.
Greg is an awesome
character.
Yeah. Greg is the best.
Yeah.
Especially when he gets excited.
the characters are so good in that.
You know, it's hard for me to jump in on this one because I actually haven't played Night in the Woods yet at all. Yeah. But I can speak for Celeste when I say that it is one of my favorite indie games on Switch right now. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those games that you can just jump into right away and pick it up. Like, you don't have to follow the story at all, even though the story is there and it's really good.
Yeah.
It's also just a game that you can mindlessly kind of get through.
I guess I wouldn't say mindlessly. Some of those rooms are real head scratchers. But I guess if you have like a specific time constraint, Celeste would be really good for that too, because it's such an easy game to pick up and like solve one board or two. You know, but you know,
thanks, Grandpa.
Yeah, sorry,
my boards.
All right, well. That's our show this week. Thank you guys very much for watching and listening. We are a weekly show on IGN.com, but you can also find us on YouTube and any of your favorite podcasting listening services. So definitely make sure you're subscribed to us on YouTube or the podcast stuff if you aren't already. So, Pear, where can people find you at?
On planet Earth and on Twitter, Pear IGN.
Cool. And Jonathan?
You can find me on MySpace, always. No, on Twitter, at JM Dornbush.
What's your song on MySpace
right
now? Oh,
it's Dashboard Confessional.
Okay.
Always and forever.
Hands
yeah, hands down.
I'm at ZacharysD on Twitter, and you can find me at the IGN office in San Francisco most days.
Or in Tokyo.
Or in Tokyo for the next 10 days, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Such, I'm so jealous.
That's where I'll be.
Cool. And my name is Philip Musin. You can find me on Twitter at Philip Musin. Thank you guys for watching once again, and we'll see you again next week.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.